Welcome to the IT Thought Leaders interview with Tom Raftery.
Scene one, Apple, take two.
With us today, we have Salim Ismail. Salim is CEO of PubSub. First off, Salim, thanks a million for agreeing to the show.
You're very welcome. Happy to be here.
Salim, first off, I guess I should ask, for anyone who's not familiar with you, who is Salim Ismail and what is PubSub?
I co-founded PubSub, and we've been building it now for 3 years. My personal background is I'm actually Canadian, but originally from India. I spent 10 years in Europe, and I've been living in New York for the last 5 years. And I started off doing IT work, building large-scale financial systems and database systems, and then I moved to 5 years of management consulting. And then I've been building companies for the last 5 years.
And PubSub is your latest venture?
PubSub is my latest venture.
And what is PubSub?
PubSub is what's called prospective search. So when you go to Google or Yahoo, and you search for information or Technorati or Feedster, what they've done is indexed information, put it in a bucket, and you're fishing around in that bucket, and by definition, you're searching the past. And that's called retrospective search. Mm-hmm. When you go to PubSub, we do the complement of that. Rather than storing data, we store your query, and we match it against anything new that appears. It's like a persistent, always-on search. And we have a matching engine as opposed to a search engine. So it's like putting a filter in a hose and catching information as it's flying by, as opposed to fishing around in a bucket.
Okay. And a lot of people are familiar with Technorati, obviously. Is this something similar to Technorati's watch lists?
It is an appearance. The underlying technology is very, very different. Everybody that does alerting on the internet today, be it Google News Alerts or eBay Auction Alerts, does it in batch mode. That is, they store information and then they periodically run a set of queries against it. And you introduce a certain amount of latency into the system when you do that. eBay is a great example. It used to be, when they have those email auction alerts.
Yeah.
It used to be that you'd be notified within a couple of hours of an auction matching a criteria. And we're finding it now takes up to 5 days sometimes to be notified when a new auction matches your criteria. What we do is do all of that in real time. And here's the problem that we've solved when you do alerting or what's called publish and subscribe. If, say, you have 1,000 queries for different Google News alerts on, say, Cork or on blogs or on Katrina or on the riots in France, if you have 1,000 of those persistent queries, or we would call those subscriptions, every new story that comes in is to scan that list and say, does it match, does it match, does it match? And it's a many-to-many problem. So if you have 1,000 stored queries and 1,000 new stories, you have 1,000,000 matches that you have to do.
Right.
And you can handle that on a database. Databases solve this problem at a couple of hundred events per second. But as you get to internet scale and you have, like eBay, 10 million saved searches and 10 million new auctions, you have a boatload of matching to do.
Right.
If you can only match at a couple of hundred events per second, you're looking at a football field of architecture. Okay? So, or you introduce a great deal of latency into the system. What we've built is a matching engine. It's an algorithm that does nothing but reconcile new information events against stored queries. And rather than a couple of hundred events per second, we operate at 3 billion matches per second.
3 billion?
Billion. So we test it. We take 100,000 queries for stock information, say. Like, tell me whenever IBM goes above 60 or a Microsoft trade is more than 5,000 shares, et cetera, et cetera. We load those 100,000 queries into our system, and then we pump through 10,000 ticker trade events and see how quickly can we do 1 billion matches, which is what that multiplication is. And if you, when we run the engine like that, we're doing 1 billion matches, and it works out in roughly a third of a second.
Wow.
And that's on a desktop, by the way. So today, for example, we may have just crossed 1 million subscriptions in our system, or 1 million persistent queries. We're seeing about 2.5 to 3 million new information events coming in across the blogosphere through all the blog updates. And so that we're doing close to 3 trillion matches per day. And we're still doing all our matching on one box.
Wow.
Because if you think we can do 3 billion matches per second, 3 trillion matches is 1,000 seconds worth of work, but spread out across the whole day.
What kind of people are using PubSub right now, and what are they using it for? Or do you have that information? Have you been...
Sure. There's four primary use cases for this animal called prospective search. One is reputation tracking, brand tracking, ego searches, etc., right?
Yes.
So lots of PR firms use us to track their clients, because if you're a PR professional, you need to know the instant any of your clients is mentioned.
Sure.
Brand managers use us to track their information. We've heard a lot of reporters use us to track names of their stories or links to their stories to see whenever those are mentioned. We answer the general question, tell me whenever X happens. And when you solve this problem, you have to solve this matching problem. And this is the problem we've solved it at internet scale. So PR folks, marketing professionals, brand managers, product managers, MSN Spaces, I think the team has publicly said that they use PubSub to track whenever anybody mentions it so they can see what's being said. Take that into account and rework that into the product design queue.
Okay.
So that's one use case, which is just reputation management or brand management. Another is discovery, where if you're subscribed to a topic like, say, nanotechnology, you find new sources that you didn't know existed before. And a third, and a very important one, is called material events. A material event is something that if you'd known about it earlier, you would have changed what you did.
Right, yeah.
The stock market is a classic example. If you knew the price had dropped, you might have bought it. But weather problems, train delays, traffic problems, auctions running out, etc., all considered material events. A concert ticket that you didn't know was going on sale, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we've started off in the blogging world, but our engine is general, so it doesn't matter what kind of XML schema you throw at it. We're moving now to the kind of the material events side of things, which is where we think things become very, very interesting.
And just if to go back to the brand management for a second, I'm just thinking to try and make it a little bit specific. You worked here in Ireland for a while, and from why for Bupa Ireland.
Yes.
If Bupa Ireland were using PubSub to brand manage, they would what? They would go to your site. They would type in their own name, Bupa Ireland, or maybe their competitors' names or something like that, and
sure.
they would get what in return?
Well, what we do is you get a link which you can paste into your browser or bookmark or put it into your RSS aggregator, and in that file or that feed, you would get all the latest mentions of Bupa Ireland.
Right.
So brand managers typically use this to put in their own companies' names, and the names of their competitors, and interesting subjects in their space, latest developments in healthcare, etc. Maybe the health minister's name, so that whenever he says something or he's mentioned, that gets pumped through. So somebody in Bupa Ireland, I was part of the team that was sent across to help set it up. So I had a fantastic few months in Cork and drank quite a lot of Murphy's. Which I tend to prefer to Guinness, by the way.
Good, so do I.
one of the most favorite parts of my life. I had an absolute ball over there. So they would use that to put in their company names and their competitor names and just track what's being said about them.
Sure. One difference I noticed between... I use both PubSub and Technorati myself, and one difference I noticed between PubSub and Technorati is that PubSub provides full feeds in the RSS, whereas Technorati seems to provide only partial feeds. This is a kind of a debate that goes on in the blogosphere, or flares up on the blogosphere from time to time, about whether bloggers should provide full or partial feeds.
Right.
And it's one Robert Scoble has commented on it many times, and he's always in favor of full feeds, and so am I. You're publishing full feeds so that people can see all of the information in any particular article, which means they don't go to your site necessarily. They don't have to go to your site to see the full article. Whereas Technorati, I guess, are bringing people in for monetizing ads. Can you talk to me a little about that? Because I'm not sure. First of all, I love the fact that you're publishing full as opposed to partial, but I'm a bit confused because I don't see where you're financing this.
Okay. Well, currently we're financed through investment. We don't We will at some point figure out how to put advertising in, but we haven't worked. We want to wait till the model settles down a bit because it's not clear how to best monetize and advertise in RSS feeds without annoying people. And with you've got the aggregators and you've got the blog readers, and so there's a whole ecosystem that has to be worked out there. So we only do it because we're not entirely clear what the best model is. Okay, but let me talk a bit about the full feeds and so on. We are a feed company. We only read the feeds. We don't go back and crawl HTML.
Okay.
My understanding about Technorati, and it'd be best to ask them this to clarify, is that they use the feeds to go and scrape the full web page, and so they're a web crawling company in a sense. They use the ping system and the notification system in pings to go and crawl web pages.
Right.
Because they do that, they would be breaking copyright if they displayed the full article or the full page. So they only display a very short summary so that they don't annoy the original web page users.
Okay.
That's my understanding of it, but you should really clarify that with them because I'm surmising that.
Okay.
Other companies like Feedster, ourselves, etc., we only read the feeds. We are very much in favor of people putting in their full content into the feeds.
Yeah.
Because it's a syndication mechanism. When people put something into the feeds, it's for syndication, and we, as long as we give attribution, etc., then we can match against it.
Yeah.
So we want as much information in the feeds as possible so that we can match against, and then we can deliver the results wherever they need to go.
Okay. One of the things I do when I line up an interview on this show is I generally publish ahead of time on my blog to say I'm going to be interviewing whoever it is and do you have any questions for that person. And people read that on the blog and they leave questions from time to time for me to ask. In your own case, I did that earlier in the week. I put up a post and said I'm going to be interviewing Salim of PubSub. And unfortunately, Salim, I have to tell you, nobody left any questions. Do you think...
That could be a reflection of you or of me.
Not even my mother left a question. I was distraught.
Right.
No, that's where I was coming to. Is do you see that as a reflection on PubSub? Is PubSub still below the radar in a lot of people's minds, do you think?
Well, if we have our users in the hundreds of thousands. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're very much in the core blogging world. A lot of people there use us. We have not made any efforts to go out into the broader space, because we're not ready for it.
Okay.
So let me talk about that for a second. You see, blogs are the first wave of a general paradigm called publish and subscribe.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay? And I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. But basically, we need to understand, we're taking a very radical approach to search. When you come to PubSub and you put in a phrase like Boop Ireland or Nanotechnology, there's no immediate gratification. We don't come back to you and say, here are the 50 things that were said. We basically tell you, okay, we've got your query, get lost, don't bother us anymore, but the instant this appears at some point in the future, we'll let you know. So there's no immediate gratification, there's a usability issue with the way we do things.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very deliberate. So many users, say the mainstream user came and looked at us, they'd go, bloody hell, there's no results. It must not work very well.
Yeah.
And go away. So we're not, until we're ready, and until the concept has grabbed on, we don't want to expose ourselves to the general user. That's one reason. The second is that our website, frankly, is needs a bit of work on the usability side.
Yeah.
And we're redoing it at the moment because we are not a blogging company as such. Blogs are great because they speak the language of publish and subscribe. But basically, blogs are an RSS and so on is the wrapper for text. Right?
Yeah.
It's an envelope to publish textual information, and blogs are inherently pretty messy. We're moving towards this concept called structured blogging and other things, where it'll become much more sensible, and that's when we'll come out in a much more public way. So let me talk for a second about publish and subscribe, and you may have heard me on the panel at Lay Blog speak about this.
Yes, yeah.
But there's fundamentally three important ways of exchanging information between people or on a network or between computers. One is called messaging, like postal mail or email. You address it, you send it, you hope the system delivers it for you. And it's a piece of information going from A to B.
Yeah.
When you go up a level of complexity, you have what's called request response. One question, one answer. Can I have your business card, a database, client-server architectures, database queries? Google is a request response system. When you go up one more level of complexity, you have what's called publish and subscribe, which is one question, many answers, over time. And the question is, tell me whenever X happens. So I could say, tell me whenever you're free, and I'm subscribing to a condition that may happen in the future. Okay?
Yeah.
This is the whenever question. Now, these are components that have been built into computer systems for a very long time. These are not new ideas. Even Outlook has a little publish and subscribe component where it's saying to the server, tell me whenever there's new mail so I can ding and beep and turn black. Okay?
Yeah.
If you look at the evolution of the Internet, we've seen that in the 80s, we took messaging out of office systems and corporate applications, dropped it on the Internet in a generalized form called SMTP, and the use of it exploded.
Yeah.
In the 90s, we implemented the web, which is a generalized request response system. And the use of that exploded. And it took 10 years in the 80s to fully get to grips with getting a piece of information reliably from A to B. We spent 10 years in the 90s kind of making sure we could reliably get, ask a question and get an answer back. When you click on a web page or a link, you're saying, can I please have that web page? And the server goes, here you go. And then you click on another link and the server goes, here you go, and so on.
Yeah.
We're now just entering this third decade where we're saying, tell me whenever. And kind of like the early days of email when you had CC mail and MS mail and everybody did it in a different way, today we have different types of alerting systems like Google News Alerts does it one way, Technorati Watchlist does it another way, we do it a third way, eBay Auction Alerts does it a fourth way, etc. And we can see that will reconcile into a general method where you can say to the network, tell me whenever. Because the amount of information on the Internet today is overwhelming,
yeah.
But it's largely passive. You have to look it up with a web browser.
Yeah.
And clearly the next step in that evolution is for the information to become active and have it tell you when something happens rather than you having to look it up every time.
Right.
So blogs are the kind of the first generalized form of publish and subscribe. Note that the interesting thing about a blog is you can say to a blog, tell me whenever.
Yeah.
Right? That's the useful part about it. And what we're doing now at PubSub is rolling that capability out, not just for blogs, but for many, many other types of information. So if on our website, for instance, the streams of information that we monitor are 18, 19 million blogs, but all major press releases from all the major wire services, airport delays in the U.S., we have the world's only XML alerting service.
Right.
Okay? I'll give you a great example of publish and subscribe is a fire alarm. If you wanted to check for a fire using a request response mechanism, you'd have your RSS reader repeatedly saying, is there a fire, is there a fire, is there a fire? You really want the fire alarm to tell you when there's a fire.
Yeah.
Okay. The one domain where this is fully built out is the financial markets. If you think about this, all the stock market systems, they're all saying, tell me whenever.
Uh-huh.
This stock reaches this level or this happens so I can buy or sell, etc. And there they've had the ROI to solve this matching problem, which is with billion-dollar systems, to be able to tell instantly whenever a certain condition is met.
Right.
What we've effectively done is taken that capability and plunked it down onto any other type of information stream.
So, for instance, if you're looking for a house in a particular area at a particular value, or if you're a job seeker looking for a particular job type in a particular area with a particular value?
Exactly. So you might want to say, tell me the instant U2 tickets are available for sale within 100 miles of me. Right? There's
yeah.
no point in reintroducing that on Google a month late or 2 weeks late.
Sure.
You might want to say, I'm looking for a one-year-old Jeep Wrangler that's blue.
Uh-huh.
Here's my query, and the instant that appears, let me know, but don't bother me. I don't want to have to repeatedly come back and look.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things that people use us for, and that paradigm is slowly becoming mainstream capability. There's a lot of latent demand for it, but because people don't understand that the need is there. But as we get more and more streams of information online, that'll become much more interesting. And this whole movement that we're doing, pushing called structured blogging, is leading towards that.
Okay. Seeing as you brought it up, do you want to talk a bit more about what structured blogging actually is?
Sure. When people go to blogs today, as I mentioned earlier, blogs are RSS is a bit of a wrapper for text.
Yeah.
So you go up and you say, I really like the Harry Potter movie, or I didn't like this Coldplay CD, or I really loved it, etc., or I went to that event and the Wi-Fi didn't work that well, etc. And it's fundamentally not that useful. It's useful for people to read, but machines can't analyze that and disseminate it very easily. Or you have to spend an extraordinary amount of natural language processing and sentiment analysis to make any sense of it. It would be much better if you were going to, if you wanted to talk about a movie, to fill out a little form called a movie review, give us the name, put in the rating, we'll pull the image down from IMDb, you can put your comments in, and you publish that. And now the XML, the underlying structure, gets syndicated and sent out.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we've, now there's, TechnoReady has something called microformats, which is XML forms, type information embedded in the web page. We have something, we've had something called structured blogging XML. And there's a variety of people, Movable Type has type lists where you can fill out the information, but the information doesn't get syndicated. It just looks nice on their blog. So what we've tried to do is say, look, let's create a general compatibility box, and let's have everybody sing off the same hymn sheet. And we've hired Mark Cantor, who I'm sure you're very familiar with.
I know Mark, yeah.
So Mark is building a set of open source plugins for Movable Type, WordPress, Drupal, etc., where on your blog, instead of saying, I'm going to put up a chunk of text, you can fill out a movie review or a restaurant review or a product review or an offer to sell something or a job offer. And this is going to have a pretty profound impact on the way bloggers publish things, the style of it, and we think it's going to create a very, very interesting change in the actual structure of information on the Internet. So now you'll be able to fill out a little form, hit publish, and that underlying XML, the structure of the information, will also get syndicated. So somebody else somewhere else can say, I want to see all movie reviews for Harry Potter and see them all in a structured way, or I want to see all movie reviews for 4 stars or more, that kind of thing.
Wow.
Right? So when somebody says, right now if somebody puts up, I have a job announcement and it'll be 50K per year, the machine can't tell whether the 50K is a salary or what that is. Whereas if there's a little field saying the salary will be X, we can filter on that.
Salim, this is potentially pretty enormous, if I'm understanding you correctly.
Yes.
of course you would say yes. But
well, let me talk about that for a second. If you think about the information on the Internet, it's held in two forms. There's unstructured information, which is text information, which is on HTML pages and just raw text all over the place.
Yeah.
Which is called the visible web. And it's the part that Google can crawl.
Uh-huh.
And Google, I think, has 10 or 11 billion pages that they can index this way. But the vast amount of information on the Internet is actually what's called structured information, hidden in databases, and it's called the hidden web because you have to go into a database and access it via a database to get it. eBay, for example, or AutoTrader, or Craigslist are examples of hidden web databases. People have done analyses, and they've worked out that the hidden web is about 400 to 500 times bigger than the visible web, okay?
Yeah.
So that's a monstrous amount of information. Let's consider that the vast, vast majority of the information on the Internet is not available to the search engine spiders. And it's not available for two or three reasons. One is AutoTrader doesn't let Google crawl their databases because they'd be out of business pretty quickly if they did. That's one. Secondly, Google is a text engine, and therefore if you're searching for a blue Wrangler, are you looking for a Jeep or jeans? You know, you lose the context if you just suck up text.
Yeah.
And the third reason is that the information in these hidden web databases is volatile. It changes quite often. An eBay auction lasts 5 days or 7 days. If Google takes, say, a month to crawl the general web on average, by the time it's crawled these items, they're out of date. And so those are three reasons why people don't, the spiders can't get to the hidden web. And you have spiders for a request response system, right? They go out, index it, bring it back, put it into that bucket. Our contention is that a publish and subscribe model is a much more interesting form of searching the hidden web, where you can say, tell me whenever this happens, and a hidden web provider like an eBay, AutoTrader, or a blogger, etc., can say, hey, I've now got this thing, and it's constantly publishing, and the system is then sitting there listening for you, and the instant there's a match, you get notified. Now, let's talk about the evolution for a second on the Internet of HTML versus XML or visible versus hidden information.
Yep.
If you think about the evolution of HTML on the web over the last 10 years, if you wanted good content, 10 years ago, AOL kind of had it all. They tried to aggregate all the good HTML, right?
Yeah.
And they tried to have a walled garden, and you had to pay to play either as a subscriber or as a publisher. Then hosting became cheap, and tools like Dreamweaver and FrontPage made it easy for anybody to create good content. As a result, billions of websites got created all over the world. AOL got completely disintermediated. And now you compete not on trying to own that HTML, which you can't because it's owned by the individual websites, but on the services you layer on top of it. So Google indexes it, Yahoo portals it, Alexa ranks it,
yes,
and so on. Okay? And they compete on the services layered on top of it. So that's been the evolution of the HTML world. If you look at the hidden web, we're still kind of in the Stone Ages, in a sense, because you have to pay AutoTrader for the privilege of publishing a car for sale, or Monster for announcing a job, or eBay for selling an auction. Okay?
So now through my own blog software,
exactly,
I can start publishing that I wanted to sell my lawnmower.
Exactly.
And
if we give you, what we're doing is similar to Dreamweaver and FrontPage. Right now, if you want to publish XML on the web, you have to go somewhere and do it. If you think about the success of Craigslist, it's largely because it's free to publish.
Yeah.
Right? That's why it's successful. If we now say, okay, let's release the same kind of tools that make it easy for anybody to publish right off their blogs, a movie review, a job offer, an offer to sell something, etc., you radically change the infrastructure and the way data is organized on the internet, and more importantly, and most importantly, the individual blogger retains ownership of that information.
Yeah.
When you go to Craigslist and submit something, you give ownership of that information to Craigslist, or to eBay, or to AutoTrader, or to Monster. And we're saying, why? Put it on your blog, have it structured, it'll get syndicated out this concept called a feed mesh, which I'll talk about in a second. And then everybody who wants it will find it instantly. Technorati can do retrospective search on it. We can do prospective search. Other people can pick it up and do vertical search capabilities on golf items or job offers, etc. But now you retain ownership at the individual level, and the web becomes much more flat the way it was intended to be and distributed the way it was intended to be.
So have you just destroyed eBay's model?
No, you still need eBay. That's a very good question. Because eBay, you still need eBay for the reputation management they provide, right?
Yeah.
And also the payment consummation services provided by PayPal. But eBay gets its value from, we think about three parts. One is the reputation management, the second is the payment consummation services, and third is the ownership of the data. If you take away the ownership of the data, you still have a lot of value there, and you still need eBay. I don't imagine anybody stopping using eBay, and I'm an avid eBay user. But for the first time, you allow competition in that space. Okay. Now, eBay, I think, understands this. The one company that we think gets this very well is Amazon. Okay. Amazon is providing an entire set of services for you to work off, and really what they are is a big fulfillment system.
Yeah.
And they've done a fantastic job of opening up their APIs and making it easy for people to use their services and find things easily and look things up and so on. But it will create a sea change, similar to the way in the late 90s Dreamweaver and FrontPage made a sea change in terms of how HTML was organized on the internet. So we're launching this next week at a conference called Syndicate.
Okay.
And the participants that are lined up for that are that have expressed interest in this and are participating include Yahoo, Google, AOL, Technorati, PubSub, Feedster, NewsGator, Bloglines, WordPress, Six Apart, Indeed, EVDB, et cetera. There's about 30 to 40 companies that have said we're behind this, and Mark Cantor is going to announce this. We're all going to get up on stage, hold hands, sing kumbaya, and say, this is what's happening. Okay? For example, we actually released a WordPress plugin in March, April that allows you to publish movie reviews or book reviews. Okay?
Yeah.
And there's thousands of people publishing movie reviews and book reviews using that format, and they don't even realize it. And I think the key is that we want to make it invisible and easy for the user. I think Greg Reinecker of MuseGator said that the key thing about the evolution of RSS is you won't use the word RSS anymore, right? You want to make it really easy, and all you're saying to people is, hey, publish structured information off your blog and let anybody who wants to get it. And we've developed this thing called the feed mesh to do that.
Just thinking about it for a second, bloggers are still, in Ireland at any rate, individuals. There are very few organizations who are blogging in Ireland.
Yes.
If I think of it from an organization's point of view, again, if we go back to something like Bupa Ireland, why would they want to do structured blogging?
Job announcements. They might want to announce price changes
okay.
or new products. Right now, there's about a dozen schemas that have been announced, and those will be added to. And they could have on their website, instead of putting... You see, websites today are static pages that people have to come and crawl and hope to get found.
Yeah.
Right? If you can publish job announcements or price changes or product announcements or press releases, etc., right off your own blog or call it a website,
yeah.
because it's, you can see where this is going. Yeah. Blogs and websites are starting to merge.
Yeah.
It becomes a lot more simple. You don't have to hope that people find you. Anybody who's interested will find you. Say Porsche started issuing photographs of the new models, and a lot of people would subscribe to it. And they don't have to worry about who. They can just publish and know that whoever wants it will find it. Okay. Similar to if Bupa Ireland announces job offers or press releases or offers to sell things, etc., off their blog or off their website, what they can count on is that everybody who's interested will find that information.
Spectacular.
And that's what this thing called a feed mesh is. Let me talk about that first, actually.
Please, yeah.
Right now, the way blogs work is there's a pinging system in blogs where a blog publishes a ping or it's a small XML message saying, I've been updated. And people aggregate these pings. Technorati aggregates them and then knows to go back and crawl the blog. Or we receive that and get the feed and publish the feed to us, etc. About a year ago, it started with a collaboration of Feedster and a few other folks at FooCamp. They came up with this concept called a feed mesh, which is instead of all of us watching these pings and all of us going and crawling a blog 20 times over, why don't we share the blog updates amongst each other, and then we don't have to go back and get it every time. So we announced this, we got very excited about this because it just makes sense, because there's an enormous cost for every blog vendor or blog aggregator in the market to going and crawling all these blogs and aggregating all these pings, and it's pretty messy.
Yeah.
And nobody, we can't, it's not a sensible place to compete. And also we all, if you notice, we all compete on the services that we provide, but it doesn't make sense to try and have the biggest list of blogs. In a world of syndication, you want maximum distribution.
Yeah.
We should be sharing all our blog updates and not trying to compete on how many blogs we each rank. So in January or February, when we announced this thing called a feed mesh and announced our full support behind it, we happened to have the largest list of feeds in the world. I think we had 8 million and Technorati had 6.5 or something like that.
Okay.
And we said, okay, we're going to give away our blog updates to whoever wants it. And let's all share our blog updates amongst each other. Over this year, Yahoo, Google, VeriSign, Ping-O-Matic, etc., and about 20 or 30 other blog aggregators have all participated, so that we have worked out a system amongst ourselves. It's a little bit like a DNS system,
okay.
where we share our blog updates amongst each other so that we don't have to go crawling the blogs back and forth. For instance, AOL sends us all their blog updates right off their systems, and we have promised them and anybody else that if you send us your pings, we will give it to anybody else who wants it. Okay, so that's the feed mesh, and it's now in version 2. And something, let me give you a couple of examples that will come from operating like this and organizing ourselves like this.
Okay.
One is we can say to publishers, you know, we know you're worried about putting your full post in the article because it'll get copyright violations and it'll get disseminated without attribution and so on. So why don't you send us to the feed mesh the full article of what you're trying to publish, newspapers, magazines, journals, etc. We'll match against it and perform our services on it, but we'll only distribute a summary.
Okay.
Right? So then that drives people back to the original site, which is what they want. That's one small feature that would come out of something like this. The second is spam detection. We can collaborate together and work out spam detection amongst ourselves eradicated before it gets to the end users, which is a big problem today, as everybody is aware of. Yeah. So if you think about the structured blogging, that the ability to publish XML off people's blogs combined with the feed mesh, which is this general capability to publish and disseminate and syndicate any information, these two, I think, form a very powerful pincer movement around the information on the internet and make it open for everybody.
It's being announced next week at the Syndicate conference.
Yes.
How soon will the tools for publishers be available? You've said already that there's a plugin available for WordPress, but say for...
Well, we'll be announcing the plugins for WordPress and Movable Type at the conference. So on that day, people will be able to download and start publishing using those schemas. Okay, and a lot of those schemas have been worked out with the industry players. For instance, for the event schema, we've talked to upcoming.org and EPTP, and we've tried to talk to Meetup and other folks to say, okay, guys, let's work out what the superset XML schema for an event should look like, or an offer to sell, or a movie review, and so on. And largely, those have been worked out in the past anyway.
Yeah.
And Microformats has done a fair bit of work on this as well. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. All we're trying to say is let's get compatibility amongst all the various players so that when somebody hits publish on their blog in a structured way, it goes into the web page for TechnoID to crawl it, it goes into the feed for us to find it, it goes wherever the heck anybody wants it, because you want that information to get disseminated.
Yeah.
So we're very quickly after that will come support for... Drupal may be ready on that day. I think the Bright guys and a couple of other folks are working on the Drupal plugin. But then very quickly, I think you'll see support in all the major blogging tools. Because, for instance, if you're a blogging tool and everybody else is supporting structured publishing and you're not, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So there's a strong incentive for people to do that. And then people, folks like TechnoReady can read that XML in their way and do retrospective search on it. We can do the alerting on it, et cetera, et cetera.
Fantastic. Have you any more announcements coming down the line that we should be aware of?
Well, this may be why nobody's asked any questions, because they're kind of like, wow, what? Because we've been talking about this a little bit for the last few months, and it's kind of everybody's a little bit stunned at the enormity of what this could mean.
Yeah,
we're not building a better hubcap here. We're building a whole new highway, and as such, it takes time to filter into people's brains. But basically, in PubSub, you can watch out for the fact that sometime in the next few months we'll be relaunching our website, and we are fully behind structured blogging, and we've actually paid for the open source plugins just to get the logjam broken and have everybody singing off the same hymn sheet. And I think that's going to be quite. I think it's going to be a very, very big rising tide over the next 2 to 3 years, and we'll have some pretty big implications for how information is structured and layered all around the web.
It's pretty enormous. Wow, I'm struggling here to even come to grips with it.
See, now you know it's been a good interview when the interviewer has run out of impressions and is dumbfounded. What you need now, Tom, is a pint of Murphy's.
Okay, that's fantastic, Salim. Around this time of the interview, I normally head into a couple of final questions that I start to ask people. You've covered one or two of them already. I normally ask people about monetizing their particular application, and in your case, you're saying that we'll build the architecture and we'll build the traffic and we'll worry about monetizing subsequently.
Yeah, we've worked very hard to make sure that our engine can scale and our approach can scale, because we're trying something that's never been done before. As far as we know, we have the only matching engine in the world. That can handle this matching problem. We wanted to make sure that once we released it to general use, that A, it was easy to use, and B, it would actually work. I think one of the reasons that we don't get talked about a lot in the blogging world is that our stuff generally always works.
Right.
And we hear repeatedly from people that our results are really solid and reliable, and they just never have to worry about it. So that's a good problem to have in one sense. But now that we know that the approach can scale and we're doing all this matching on one box, sometime next year we'll need a second box to do all our matching. We can start figuring out how to monetize it. And, you know, if you have access to all this data and we're able to see what's happening in real time, there's many ways of doing it. Basically, the two ways we're looking to monetize are when we deliver that car to you saying, hey, this two-year-old auto Jeep Wrangler just appeared, the one you wanted. You know, there can be some interesting contextual ads along the side. And secondly, we're private labeling our service for other folks. In the early days of retrospective search, Google powered AOL and powered Yahoo while they built up their own capabilities, right?
Yeah.
We're kind of following the same model. We look at Web 1.0 as data and Web 2.0 as services, if you want a succinct way of our view of all of that. Jeff Bezos, I think, said Web 1.0 was making the web interesting and readable by people, and Web 2.0 was making it readable by machines.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Do you listen to podcasts?
I do when I have time. And my problem is I'm running around and trying to keep all our different threads going at the same time. So one of the things about living in New York is you don't drive.
Yeah.
And so if people that don't drive in New York don't have the capability to listen to podcasts like everybody else does.
Sure. Sure.
So I tend not to listen to too many of them, but wherever I can, I listen to them.
So if you're flying or whatever?
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Exactly.
Do you have any particular favorites?
I do listen to some of your podcasts. I've listened to some of the Blogspurt podcasts.
Nicole, yeah.
Nicole's ones. I really like some of the stuff happening out in California. Around the Web 2.0 podcast,
yes,
because
yes.
Some of the venture podcasts, etc., because it's just the creativity that comes out of there is quite something.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Salim, that was fantastic. Thanks a million for making me speechless at several points during the interview. That's always good.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fun meeting you, and I really miss my time in Cork, and I'll have to come back and visit you folks sometime.
Well, anytime. You know where I am. Give me a shout. You can have a place to stay and a drinking buddy for some Murphys.
Done. And say hi to the folks at Bupa Ireland if you talk to them.
I will, of course. Salim, thanks very much.
Well, that's it for this episode of the IT Thought Leaders interview with Tom Raftery. Thank you for listening.
Scene 1, Apple Take 2.